Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Venna Solutions. Do you ever wonder if you're measuring the right metrics for your business? How do we know when it's time to retire some of those metrics and replace them with new ones? It can be so easy to become complacent and just keep measuring the same things that you've always measured. For me, when I think about this topic, I think less is more. I would rather focus in on a few critical things that matter and make sure we're really watching them than start to be drowning in too many things and not really paying attention to them the way that we should. Joining me today is Craig Schiff, founder, CEO, and leading analyst at BPM Partners. Craig is a pioneer in business performance management, or BPM for short. As a founding member of Hyperion Software, he helped to create and define the field as it has evolved from business intelligence into business performance management. Craig, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thanks, Melissa. Happy to be here.
So let's start with your company and your background. You actually helped to define business performance management and the field. What got you interested in this field and how did you get started? And maybe tell us a little bit more about your company as well.
Right. So business performance management started because I was actually a software developer and I developed custom financial reporting solutions for large corporations. And as I was doing that, so they were reporting on actuals, but where they were struggling was on the planning side, putting together a plan that they can compare against how they actually did, which then, of course, is really looking at performance. So they were tracking actuals and budgeting was all over the place and they didn't even really do it very well, but if they did, it was in whatever the spreadsheet of the day was when we were starting Lotus 1, 2, 3 in the early days, and it didn't all come together. And when you put it together, you could actually measure performance. And that was the key to this whole thing, and that's the label business performance management. It's enabling companies to plan, monitor, and execute on their strategy. That's when all the pieces come together. That's what they're able to do. And we'll discuss some more of that today as we go. So I was on the vendor side. So I was a developer first as custom solutions, but then packaged solutions by working with software vendors and leading those companies. And then today, BPM Partners helps companies get their requirements together, identify potential solutions, and find the best solution for them to enable them to do this and step up from wherever they are today, manual processes, spreadsheets, older legacy systems, whatever it may be. That's what we do. We help them address those needs. And along the way, part of what we do is help them develop the key metrics, the key performance indicators they should be looking at in these systems. And we'll talk about the status of where we really are and what we run into with these companies we help and where they are in terms of the development of those metrics.
Excellent. It sounds like you've been able to build a great career on this. And it's so interesting to hear where it all started from. Now, maybe before we get into a lot of questions, I'd love to just set the stage with maybe some of the more basic definitions, because I think this is an area where a lot of definitions might come out and those definitions really matter. So what do you think are some of the key ones that we should be aligning on?
So, you know, people use certain words or expressions interchangeably. They'll talk about a dashboard. They'll talk about a scorecard. They'll talk about a key performance indicator. They'll talk about a metric. And they don't really know the difference. And they are very different. So, you know, if we start at the basic level, you know, a dashboard is a visual display mechanism. Nothing more, nothing less. You could display whatever you want on there. It's a data visualization tool. But it's not a scorecard. That's not the same thing. Now, a scorecard is a collection of key performance indicators. So a scorecard is really how you're scoring your performance against your strategic objectives. And that's quite simply what it's about. And we'll talk about what a KPI is and how you define those. But a KPI, for this purpose right now, between KPIs and metrics, is really a metric that matters. So you'll have a few KPIs and many metrics. And metrics support the KPIs, but a KPI is a key indicator of how well you're doing in terms of achieving your key objectives and goals. So it's the key elements of your company's strategy, and it's a measure of how well you are executing on that strategy. Now, when you put all those KPIs together, you have a scorecard. And when you take that scorecard and use it to populate a dashboard, you have a performance dashboard or a strategic dashboard. So when you put those words in front of a dashboard, you're now talking about the combination of a visual display tool with a business scorecard, and you have your performance dashboard, which is the ultimate goal here. And I would say most people don't really have that today. And we'll discuss that further as we proceed.
Well, and great lead into the next question. So when you think about the topic of performance management and business metrics, where are we today?
We're in a bad place. I'm sorry to say. We're not in a great place. So I've been in the space a long time, and as you've mentioned, helped define some aspects of it along the way. So we've made great advances on the technology side when it comes to metrics and dashboards. Great advances. You know, back in the 90s, people had executive information systems, EIS systems. And we sold one at the vendor I was at. And really, it was a collection of static reports. I don't even know what it was populated with and who decided that, but it was a collection of static reports that if you clicked on a particular number, we had pre-built, go pull up this other report for him because that's related to the number he clicked on. So it wasn't interactive. You couldn't drill down. It was all pre-populated with pre-run reports. Technology was terrible. Today, it's much better. I mean, so we have the right tools. For example, I know at your company, you've embedded Power BI in your solution as a dashboard, and that's a very popular tool to use for that. Where we're lacking is more on the, I guess, people and process side, and having people put together a scorecard and put that on the dashboard. That's a key missing piece, and we'll look at some of the measures we have that indicate, you know, not just from the anecdotal evidence from customers we work with, but from actual research we've done, that people aren't quite there yet. And what they are doing, so when you think of performance management, I told you what its purpose is, but what people are really doing is they're fixing a broken budgeting process. So they'll buy a solution and, you know, the budgeting process today is painful. Let's fix that. Let's make it quicker, easier, and so on. Or on the financial reporting consolidation side, let's have a faster close or ensure the accuracy of the data. All important and noble goals and huge benefit, but just doing that, you're missing what performance management was intended to do, which is to help you execute on your strategy. What I'm finding is a lack of connection to the strategy. It's just we need to do budgeting, we need to put out some reports, and that's what people are doing. It was actually better in the earlier days when people sometimes would start with a performance dashboard and then fix those other components later on. Today, we're coming in starting with budgeting and planning more often than not, and then getting to consolidation and that aspect. And the dashboard piece is basically just displaying standard financial ratios, the things that were always on the reports that they've now automated with a new system. But they didn't step back and think about, are these the things we should be measuring, or are these the only things we should be looking at right now? So that's a missing piece today.
And so what do you think are the challenges getting in the way of connecting those dots and establishing what that needs to look like?
There are quite a few challenges. So first of all, it's not something people are thinking about. So the systems just inherit whatever they've been tracking over the years. And some people do have, you know, scorecards they've been using. One of the problems with those, you know, are they tend to be out of date. I mean, these things need to be looked at every 1 to 3 years. Are these the right measures? Because our strategy may have evolved. And with a changing economy, of course, your strategy needs to evolve. So they're just looking at potentially stale KPIs, you know, that used to be on a piece of paper and now it's in a new system and on a dashboard. But there are other people who don't even think in terms of that. They're just, you know, if you look at a dashboard today, what you'll see are, you know, nice graphics. You'll see the trend line on revenues. You'll see the forecast, maybe some machine learning to fill in forecast and missing periods. All interesting, wonderful stuff. If I look at that, I couldn't tell you what's strategically important to your business. I could, you know, every company, they want to improve revenues, increase forecast accuracy, and manage expenses. You look at every dashboard, they'll look the same. I don't know what your strategic goals are. How are you different from the other company? So here's what the impediment is to it. So first, they're not thinking about it. But secondly, when you try to create KPIs, it's a difficult process. It's political. Because if companies are measuring these key things and they're going to be highlighted and everyone's going to see it, well, I want to make sure it's a KPI I know I could do well at, because I don't want to be measured on something that's hard or that's a struggle for me. It's going to take a lot of effort. And maybe my compensation will be tied to it. And there are recommendations that it should be if you really want a performance culture. So you have the right KPIs and then incentive compensation is tied to it. But that makes it a hard process, you know, fraught with politics and everything else. You know, who owns that KPI? Who's responsible if it's outside of our tolerance ranges for the targets that we're trying to achieve? So it makes it a very complex process. There is a way to deal with it. There is a process to go through to get to the right place, but a lot of companies haven't embraced that. And some of the frameworks that have come out over the years, you know, to help people think about how to develop these KPIs have been fairly heavy and complex and required significant, you know, resources and time to figure out. And I believe there's an easier and better way to do that today, you know, by leveraging just the basic concepts behind the framework, but not necessarily all of the aspects, which may not be as relevant to you anyway. But it's better to leverage the good things about these frameworks and build your scorecard than to not do it at all because it's too long a process to fully embrace.
So you offer some great insight on cascading dashboards and some of the things that work or get in the way of them working. Curious if you've got any thoughts about how a company can go about breaking through some of the politics that get in the way and building a culture of accountability.
Very good question. So what you need to do, so one of the fears really is I'm going to be measured on this and maybe my compensation is going to be tied to it, which is something you're eventually going to do more than likely to create that performance culture. Don't do that initially. Don't start. Let people get comfortable with it first. But an important element also is that they believe in the data, and that's where our systems come into play, that it's trustworthy data. Because you're going to measure me on this now. I don't trust your tracking of this. I don't trust the actual data. I mean, I've seen this in sales departments where they're always reconciling, you know, their numbers with the official numbers. And they say, well, I thought I had these other deals and was getting this commission. So it's important that the data is trustworthy. So that's an important element to help them feel comfortable. And also, they're not going to be penalized, that this is a learning time for all of us. And we'll see how this goes. And if it doesn't work, maybe we'll change it and modify the targets or start with more easily achievable targets. And then we could advance the targets and reduce the tolerance ranges as it grows. So it starts small, start easy, don't affect someone's impact someone's compensation with it just yet. Maybe that's something in the future.
Excellent. Thank you. And so you talked a little bit about the timelines there. How often should companies revisit those things they're measuring and make sure that they've got those connections with strategy?
So that's, you know, for some companies, depends the industry you're in and how fast, you know, you as a company are evolving and the market that you're in, the particular vertical, you know, is evolving. 1 to 3 years. So one, certainly annually for some of those, you know, higher growth companies in a rapidly changing industry, but others, you know, maybe 2 to 3 years if they're more stable. So, you know, some companies don't do that, you know, at any point. But when you think about it, you know, as a company, you've got a mission, which shouldn't change very often. You know, most companies, they know what their mission statement is, who they're trying to be. But the strategy at this point in time to get to the next growth phase of who we want to be, you know, what does that look like? And that does change every couple of years at least, if not annually, or in some cases, I guess, more frequently. But you know, it is a hard process. So once a year is probably a reasonable time to revisit the strategy and then therefore the KPIs that tie back to that strategy.
So I think, Craig, one of the things that actually you're inspiring me to revisit here is revisiting the dashboards. I do think we put in all that work up front and it is really easy to think we're done now and you let that thing run and you move on to other things. And I think for me, one of the takeaways here is going to be going and looking at how old are some of those dashboards and have we updated things so that we do have the most critical things being measured.
Sounds good. Well, first of all, I'm just happy that you have performance dashboards with KPIs on them to begin with. So that puts you ahead of a lot of other people. But yes, go ahead and review them and update them.
And you talked a bit about some of the political challenges or the heavy lift challenges that maybe are getting in the way of making changes or getting it right and in a way that's keeping those connections with strategy. And, you know, we hear about things like balanced scorecards in the past, or OKRs is often talked about today. How do those things play in here?
So there's a combination of things, kind of best practice to do this well. So first of all, the process of developing the KPIs themselves needs to be led by someone fairly senior in the organization, so an executive sponsor, which is generally true of performance management projects in general. There are trade-offs to be made, a cultural tone to be set. You know, there's elements of change management. So you need somebody senior to do this. So someone, a senior executive sponsor, needs to lead this. And he needs to set a collaborative, non-political environment and set that tone and then go off with that senior team, the senior management team, and develop this. Let's agree on what our strategy is for the next year or 2 or 3 years. What is our strategy? What are we trying to accomplish right now? And then let's take a look at what are the short and long-term objectives that are going to enable us to achieve that strategy? What are the key business drivers, basically the execution steps to achieve that objective? And then what are the key performance indicators that will measure how successful we are on executing on those on our key business drivers? So it becomes a very logical layout and structured element. And then there's performance metrics that are, you know, below that that basically support and augment. And then for the people that are in that room, the senior team, they each run some function in the company, some department. And so they need to have a set of key drivers and KPIs that tie back to the corporate one. So there's the concept of cascading dashboards that tie together. And this is really ideal. So you've got a corporate dashboard, which has the high-level objectives that we as a corporation are trying to accomplish. Then you have the departmental ones that tie back into that. And then you could even take it down to individual teams or individuals themselves. So everyone has objectives that they can control, they're responsible for, they feel comfortable being measured on it. They have the elements and tools they need to succeed with that. And that enables everyone to participate and know what their role is. And you gain strategic alignment also. People know what's important to the company by those measures, as opposed to just a dashboard of standard stuff. I don't know what our strategic goal is. These KPIs, chosen correctly, show me what the goal is and what it is for the company, for my department, and for me individually. So that pulls it all together. Now, you talked about the frameworks. When you're thinking about KPIs, there are different ways to think about them. So most people, when they think of these things, it's financial measures. It's all the financial ratios they've always known and looked at, and those are still important. But if you think about a framework like the balanced scorecard, that gets you to consider other aspects. For example, an ideal, you know, KPI mix should probably be 50% operational and 50% financial. And financial is, like we always say, looking at what happened historically, so just tracking our performance financially. But operational are kind of leading indicators of where we're going, where we should be going, and gives us a sense of something that may impact our financial numbers later. So that's why we say there should be a mix. So balanced scorecard is an example. Financial data is one aspect of it, but it also has learning and growth, which is really about the organizational capacity to deliver and execute. So do I have the right people in place with the right skills and the right tools? It looks at internal processes, so things like quality and efficiency. It looks at customer perspective. Am I providing value to the customer? Are they happy with me? Am I retaining my customers? And you put all those pieces together without going any deeper into the balanced scorecard methodology, but just by thinking of it that way, you can begin to see how it kind of forces your hand to think about all these different aspects and pull it together. And you did mention OKRs, so objectives and key results. There's some overlap and similarity with key performance indicators, but that's, you know, designed for higher growth companies. SaaS companies use that. And what it is it ties the objectives to a set of specific key results. So they're kind of packaged together, and usually they're tied to new initiatives, whereas KPIs, key performance indicators, kind of measuring things we already do, but we have set some new target based on what we're trying to accomplish. This is a new initiative. We want to do something brand new and say, you know, that's the objective, and there's initiatives tied to that, and then what are the key results we expect from that? And then it's scored, you know, from 0 to 1 on how well we achieve that or currently achieving it, you know, versus KPIs, which tie back to a plan, you know, target. So this is what we plan to do. This is what we actually did. And then potentially external benchmarks. How are other companies or industry performing on this measure? Or even our competitors, if we can get access to that data. So, you know, they differ in how they measure. So OKRs is for some companies the right way to do it. And it's another more modern structure and framework and way to think about it. And they all have their benefits and they all have their fit. You know, larger, more stable companies can stay with KPIs. You know, faster growing companies, SaaS technology companies, you know, OKRs might be the right answer. Balanced scorecard is a kind of an overarching framework. There's also total quality management, economic value add, depending on who you are, where you are. You know, these various frameworks might work, but they could be off-putting because to fully embrace them, you know, is a large project. And so if you just kind of take a high-level tour of the concepts in there, it's enough and it's better than not having them, just to kind of bake that into what you are doing as you develop these KPIs.
And so would you advocate then for, rather than if it's a company's trying to use one of these methodologies, but falling short because maybe it's too burdensome to try to do it, or it's in some cases, I think it gets almost mistaken for strategy rather than seen as actually just a tool or an enabler that's trying to connect the dots. Would you advocate for companies continuing to try and do that, or how should they think differently so that they can accomplish the results?
So I think what's happened, I mean, in the early days, we heard a lot more about the balanced scorecard than we do today. I mean, it's in some ways similar to activity-based costing, which goes in and out of fashion. They're hard to do. There's big benefits there, but they're difficult to do. Or, you know, when you think about ABC tracking costs at that level of detail. So just taking some of the goals and concepts of those frameworks is better than not doing them at all. And my fear is if you recommend someone fully embrace it, they just won't do it at all. So it's finding that middle ground, leveraging the best thinking and knowledge behind them and why these concepts were put together and apply that to your business. I mean, for some companies, of course, fully jump in and pick a framework that fits you and go forward with it. But we've seen where we are today, you know, 45% of companies in our most recent BPM Pulse survey populate their dashboards with KPIs. That means the other 55% do not. So it's really just a data visualization tool. That's terrible. So to get the other people to do it, you can't make it hard. So just learn from and get best practices from those other strategies and frameworks and approaches to do this. But then take the kind of method I talked about. Now within your business, have a meeting with your senior team, have multiple sessions. What are we trying to do? What are the objectives? What are the key business drivers to get there? What are the KPIs that measure that? And what other metrics do we need to support that? And that's easier to do. We've done that with companies, you know, in a matter of days when they went from no KPIs to having KPIs they all bought into. I mean, it can be done. And an outside facilitator does help because it's sometimes very political. And so having an independent third party with no vested interest kind of helps that process and it feels kind of, you know, neutral and not really favoring one department over another or making it too political, just keeping it clean.
And so I think that's a great piece of advice, because as I'm sitting here thinking about why isn't it working despite, you know, many companies making efforts to do it, but something's falling short. And so for the companies where you've seen them be successful at getting measurement off the ground and keeping it alive, what are some of the key ingredients you see there that you think is leading to success?
So, you know, the biggest ingredient is cultural. And it comes from the top, and there's nothing an outsider can do in there to make that happen, but it's a cultural tone, and you can feel it in a company. It's a performance culture. It's the way they act, the way they think. There's good communication internally. People are involved. You know, there's some companies we walk into and everything's secretive. Oh, they're not allowed to see these reports. I understand that with, you know, personnel, salary data, but there's just other things about the business performance. It's held very tightly. They're not going to be successful because one of the things when you do this properly and you populate these dashboards with the scorecards that contain the KPIs and you've developed those KPIs correctly, you're going to get strategic alignment. People are going to see what's important and how well we're doing or not doing against those key indicators. But when I look at that dashboard, I can now understand what this company's about, Whereas if I just see kind of some high-level numbers or what our revenues were for the quarter, it doesn't tell me anything about who we are, what we're trying to do. Yes, did we make our numbers? Will I get paid? Obviously very important. Do we have enough cash? All those measures are still there. But this tells me what I should focus on, what's important to the company. You know, I remember when I was at one of the vendors, I ran the services group, among other things. And when you run a services group, they're in a software company, as you probably know as well, you know, there's different ways to run it. Am I running it to be a profitable cost center to contribute, you know, significantly to the bottom line? Or am I running it to keep our customers happy and referenceable so I could sell more software? And you can tell that by looking at the metrics that the company's measuring. Is it measuring me on the profitability of my services group, or is it measuring me on customer retention? So there's a tremendous amount that's communicated by those metrics. That tells me right away what I should focus on. Should I focus on keeping them happy at any cost, or should I focus on maximizing revenue?
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the intelligent platform for complete planning. Vena's award-winning platform makes financial and operational planning more efficient, unlocks performance, and increases financial intelligence across the business, so finance teams and business leaders can plan for anything. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
That tells me right away what I should focus on. Should I focus on keeping them happy at any cost, or should I focus on maximizing revenue?
And so, you know, it's making me think, as I'm listening to you, how big a role finance plays in all of this, and how we might be unknowingly driving the wrong behaviors with what we are shining a light on or how we're talking about it, you know, be it the budgets or be it some of those metrics. So what have you seen, you know, some of the best finance teams do in terms of how they lean in and help with this? I know it comes from the top. It takes the whole company. But what do you think finance teams can do to help be better at this?
So as we talk about in a lot of areas today, it's, you know, business partnering, particularly led by finance. I mean, that's a huge role today. And we see that in the systems themselves. As the systems go just from financial planning to more operational planning, it is finance that's leading the charge and pulling everything together so you don't have a lot of siloed solutions. And that applies here as well. Finance could absolutely be a leader in making this happen, but they do need to think beyond just the pure financial numbers. And that is the ultimate goal, of course, is to improve the bottom line. But the different ways you get there require measuring and incentivizing some other aspects, as opposed to just, you know, looking at the numbers themselves, which, you know, again, looking at them, we understand, let's grow those numbers, let's keep expenses down. But understanding what's important, and I think coming from finance, it would carry more weight. So you're telling me, as customer service, that it's not as important for me to be profitable. You don't want me to lose money, so perhaps break even. It's more important to retain our customers so we could build a bigger customer base because the, you know, the existing customers are good references and our annual recurring revenue will go up over time and all of that. So you telling me that makes me very comfortable in doing that. That's all you had to tell me. And coming from finance, that means a lot. So you're going to be okay if I don't produce, you know, 30% of total company revenues this year, you're going to be happy. Then that's great. So I do think, you know, finance could play a very key role in it, and in your influential position, where I think all you care about is budgets and numbers. I'm not saying that I think that, but you know, as a person in a company, that shows me that you do care about other things, and it helps me understand what's, again, strategically important to the company. So yeah, I think finance has a big role to play here.
And you've touched on this a little bit already, but in terms of how to go about organizing for these conversations, you know, whether that's information beforehand or how to go about driving the conversation, any other tips for how to get that going?
So, yeah, I mean, it comes out in meetings and communications, but it is top down. I mean, there's got to be some direction. You can't just have a bunch of people in a room. So, guys, what's our strategy? You know, there's got to be a vision at the top that's shared. And this is our vision. And for example, you know, let me make you guys aware of this. We're looking to sell the company in the next 2 years. So therefore, let's focus on maximum business valuation. And therefore, if that's our strategy, then therefore we're going to focus on, you know, minimizing expenses, maybe increasing revenues, improving margins, EBITDA. It becomes a very clear picture of what we need to do to accomplish that. Or we want to scale the business, and we want to do that through, we want to make the business more scalable, and we need to leverage channels to do that. So direct sales may not be thrilled with that approach, but again, somebody senior laying that out, and then that's going to, again, drive a whole, I mean, you can see once you start laying out the strategy, it becomes clear and obvious why these are the metrics. So if I want to scale the business and I want to grow the channels, I'm going to measure channel revenue. I'm going to measure number of partners we have. And I could look at that quarterly and have a target. I want to add 10 new partners a month, I mean, a quarter, and then see if we're achieving that or not. But it all begins to make sense and comes together. So you just need someone who's going to start that ball rolling and lay out that strategy, and everyone's going to buy into that. And I've been in companies where we've done that and this had this exact discussion, and we get, you know, a good leader can get everyone bought in. You know, sales, direct sales doesn't want to see they're losing to channels. There's ways to address that. You know, let the sales group manage those channels. Let it be part of what they do. Let them be compensated, you know, when a channel helps close a deal that maybe they work together. I mean, it's different ways and it varies by company, but there are ways to do that. But it definitely requires, you know, a good leader to make this happen.
And you talked about benchmarking, and curious, because I think that's often overlooked as part of this. How, when you think about that, what role does that play in terms of looking inside and out, and where does that fit into the equation?
Yep. So that's a big problem, and it always has been for a lot of reasons. So in our Pulse data, about 25% of people use external benchmark data in their measurement of performance. So typically the KPIs. So one of the software companies I was at, we were trying to improve our operating margin. And we set a plan each year. We're going to grow at, you know, X percent. And we saw that number and we, you know, patted ourselves on the back and we achieved, you know, our plan for the year. And then one day the CEO came in and he had gotten a report of a bunch of public software companies. Obviously hard to get that for the private companies, for public software companies. And he said, guys, look at what our peers are doing. Theoretically, our peers out there, you know, we're aiming way too low. So we're all happy we achieved this plan. It was the wrong plan. Look what the world is doing. We're missing it. And that is a missing piece again. So even if we get to the KPIs, people aren't doing that. One of the reasons is it's hard to get that data in some cases, the relevant data. Certain items aren't calculated the same way everywhere. Obviously, some of the standard financial ratios are, but some of the other elements, you know, how people count it. You know, when you look at ARR, some companies just look at ARR growth over the years, but you could look at net new annual recurring revenue, which tells you something different, by the way, just as an aside, it is an interesting metric. And then the sub-metrics that fall out from that, you know, when you're growing the average annual recurring revenue, you know, is it because of, you know, expansion within existing customers? Is it net new customers? Are we growing faster, but it's getting lost because when you look at the total ARR number, there's losses in there. There's churn, there's customer churn or reduction. Some companies are you know, reducing the number of seats to kind of cut back on costs, whatever. But there are different elements, you know, that you should be measuring and you should be looking at that give you a good sense of where that business is.
Super helpful. And so when you think about that, you know, the metrics, I think there's those known ones, some obvious ones, but you sit and say, okay, are these the right ones? I think sometimes it's also hard to figure out what are the most impactful forward-looking indicators. Any thoughts about how to go about that? And again, when what you might think are your forward-looking ones change, what would be some signs or indicators you should revisit that?
So, you know, we're getting there today as we look at extended planning and analysis, as that's growing in general in the performance management world. We are getting to those leading indicators. I mean, we saw very clearly, you know, during the last couple of years, you know, problems in the supply chain, as an example, you know, inability to get the raw materials to make our products can have financial impact. It's going to ripple through. We need to pivot and make different products or use alternative suppliers or materials. You know, it varies where we are, who we are and where we are and what operationally we look at. Customer churn, customer satisfaction, customer retention is obviously a huge one. I mean, so, you know, a lot of companies in the software industry, but across, you know, other industries, but I've seen it, software measure, you know, net promoter score as an example. And that's basically kind of the customer view of the world from the balanced scorecard model. And that tells you how referenceable your customers are. So A, as an enterprise software company, references are very important to future sales. So if that number is going down, you're going to struggle finding people to use as references for those deals. But also, if it's very low, it's an indication you might actually lose those customers. Not only are they not going to promote you, you may be losing them. And we uncover that when we look at net promoter scores. And that's something that I see a lot of the vendors actually doing these days. I mean, they use it for marketing purposes to kind of tout it, how happy our customers are. But, you know, operationally, being forward-looking, that's a good thing. So, again, it depends where we are in life as a company, what stage and what industry we're in as far as what our key operational measures are. But it's just think operationally. That's really what it comes down to. It's not just pure finance. Think operationally. These other pieces that kind of feed in and are essential to achieve our financial objectives, what are they? And we should start measuring them. And just to go back to benchmarking a second ago, because, you know, I moved on from that, but I wanted to complete the thought. So the challenge in benchmarking is getting the right data, and that's hard to do. Some vendors that provide benchmarking actually have their customers anonymously contribute to this pool of data, and then they feed that data back to the customers. Now, these very enterprising vendors, they sell it back to them. They don't necessarily hand it back to them, but the concept is there of a way to collect this data and then, within your own product, deliver it to the customers, because that's the problem. How do I get this benchmarking data in here? Where do I get it from? How do I get it in the right format? I mean, there are public company databases where you can get some of that, but how do I get it in the right format to feed into my dashboard sitting in this performance management system? So those are the challenges. And so only a handful of vendors so far have attempted to address that, providing the source data and streamlining its input into the system so you can do those comparisons. And I think if we made that easier, more people might look at benchmarking, even if there was a fee for that data. If you were able to facilitate the access to that data and streamline it into the same database with the plan and actuals that come out of the system, that I have it alongside it so I could easily produce those scorecards.
So many questions. This is a great conversation. Really appreciate it. So many thoughts going through my head. I guess a few more. I'll ask a couple more questions before we wrap. One, you talked about metrics for teams. So what are your thoughts there in terms of, it's hard for the company to do it, it must then become even harder for the team to do it and where it can fall apart. Any guidance there for leaders of teams as they think about putting in place a few metrics for their own team?
Right. So it comes back to the cascading concept. You need to know at the level above you what they're doing. And then you sit with the group. Okay, these are the key metrics. You know, we're in whatever department we're in. We're in development or whatever department we're marketing. You know, these are the corporate metrics. These are the marketing department metrics, and we're a team here, we create collateral. How do we contribute to that? But it's, again, seeing the whole chain of metrics and where do we fit? And is there a metric in there that we contribute to? So we want to launch a new product, for example. So that starts all the way from the corporate on down, and that kind of trickles through. And marketing needs to provide supporting materials for that new product, campaigns, and so on. But we're the collaterals team. So we need to create a brochure for that new product and, you know, needs to fit in this timing, and they want it, delivered in this manner, in this delivery vehicle. So whoever I am, I'm PR or I create the events and the marketing campaigns, all of those teams within marketing can tie back to there's going to be a new product and we need to provide supporting marketing material. The marketing department does. So it all becomes pretty self-evident if you do it right. And again, it does start at the top. This is one of those processes. You don't come from the bottom up. It starts at the top. You understand what's needed at each level, and then you could see where you fit. And then as an individual, eventually, if you want to take it down to that level, my own dashboard of my own KPIs, you know, I need to write this section of the brochure by this date. I mean, it becomes very specific, but that's manageable. I control myself, and I know I could do it by that date. So that's kind of how it all fits together. And again, done properly, it kind of flows very nicely.
And is there, obviously these will differ by industry, by company, but is there some general guidelines you give to your clients in terms of how many metrics, KPIs they should be measuring?
Yeah. So you will have many metrics, few KPIs. What does that mean? And I don't know why, but some years ago, I came up with the number 12. I don't recall what I was thinking. but 12. Sounds reasonable. You know, it's something you could take in and understand and look at on a single screen and get a sense of. Maybe 12 is too much, but to me, that just felt like a right number. But it's few. KPIs, there will be few. Metrics, there will be many. And that's another key distinguishing factor. And while we're on that, you know, just to flesh it out a bit, so a KPI needs to be actionable. Metrics aren't necessarily just measuring something. A KPI needs to be actionable. So, for example, coming back to something else we talked about, you know, if I'm trying to add new partners, you know, and my target is to add 10 new partners a quarter, you know, that's actionable. I know how to physically go out and do that. And if I miss it, if we only did 8, I know I need to change something. I need to increase my outreach, or maybe I need more staff to help me do that, or I need to get a more compelling message to, or change our terms. It's actionable. I can do something. So, you know, a good KPI is actionable, and there's ownership and responsibility for that metric. You can point to, if we're missing our targets for that metric, that KPI, who do we go to? Who do we ask, you know, and they need to have an action plan at the ready because, you know, what's your plan B? We didn't achieve that target. So they need to have an action plan and I know who to go to and they've got that plan lined up and ready. And that's really what defines a KPI. Somebody owns it, it's actionable, and it's tied back to our strategy and the key business drivers.
And you've given us so much great advice today. If you had to boil down to two pieces of advice you'd want to be giving to businesses regarding this topic, what would that be?
I'd like to give them 12 pieces of advice.
The magic number.
Just, first of all, I'd start with just do it. It really isn't that hard. Once you sit there, it sounds hard. And you, that's a lot of work. And these guys aren't going to get on board. And this one's a pain to deal with. And just do it. Just get the team together and come in there with a clear vision of where the company should be going. Get everyone to understand and buy into that vision of the strategy. Now, how do we get there? Because the next step is laying out particular objectives that we need to do short-term and long-term to accomplish and deliver on that strategy. And then everything flows out of it. So really, the key is the right person leading the discussion. So make sure a senior leader steps in. CFO is a good one to come in and do that. And come in with a clear vision and strategy you can communicate to the group. And they'll nod their heads, oh, I understand that. And now let's figure out how we get there.
Excellent. Such great advice. It's so great. Clearly, you're passionate on this topic and know so much about it. So really appreciate being able to learn from you today. Now, whenever we have a guest on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions for them. So are you ready?
I guess.
All right. First one. What is the best piece of business or leadership advice that you've ever received?
So it's not so much received. It's something I learned, I experienced along the way. I started my career in large corporations, and I learned I don't want to do that again. But I started in large corporations. And what I found is they were very rigid. We'd all come in and walk into our office and shut the door and go about our business. So I was working in Manhattan in New York City. And the subway would get me there a few minutes late. The boss would yell at me, you know, that I was there at 9:10 instead of 9 o'clock. It was beyond my control. Or I'd come in jeans and he would say, you have to wear suits. I'm going to go sit in my office and program, but I need to be in a suit. So my next job after that was a startup software company. And you know, that's night and day. And the software company, there was a freezer, or not freezer, refrigerator loaded with free sodas for everyone. We had weekly parties, completely different atmosphere. People came and went whatever hours, but they got their job done. There was just much more of a team spirit and excitement and passion about the company. And we all just felt together. It wasn't competitive and there was no one watching the clock. And people worked very hard. And that was just a completely different environment. And so, you know, I learned to make work fun. I mean, talk today about work-life balance, make work fun and make people feel part of it and do team building activities. So it's really all about the team. You need to have that team excited and on board and you need to reward them well. And you give them enough room, most people will be fairly successful. Let them do it their way. And particularly in a creative business like software development, you know, you let them do it their way. And reward them and thank them and yes, party. And one of the things I started when I was at one of the vendors, there was always a sales trip and, you know, they would go off for the top performers, go to Hawaii and have a golf kind of, you know, outing. I created a sales trip for the rest of the company, for services, marketing, accounting, development, and we would go on a Caribbean cruise. And that built, you know, tremendous camaraderie in the team, and they'd look forward to that every year. And what do I have to do to be selected to go on the trip? I mean, it was just tremendous. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about the style of management. And I've seen it all, and that works better. And a lot of the people that used to work for me started their own companies, and I find out they're doing cruises to the Bahamas and, you know, following some of the model we originally set up there. So that's very important. So reward the team, incentivize the team, excite them, and make them feel part of something bigger. And don't micromanage them.
Boy, I can already hear my team now. Craig said we need to party and go on a cruise. So, oh, great advice there. And next question, is there a book or a movie that's had the most impact on you?
So, yes, a book or movie. So I'll think about business. From a business perspective, there was a book that we were forced to read. I was not excited about it. So a new CEO came into one of the companies I was at and kind of dictated, I want all senior management team to read this book. And, you know, I'm thinking, I thought I was out of school. No one tells me what to read. I read whatever I want. But I read the book, and unbelievable. I loved it, when it was actually something we could apply, and I've applied it at pretty much every company I've been in since. It was called Crossing the Chasm by Jeffrey Moore. And it really targets startup technology companies. And the chasm was, how do you get from the pioneers and early adopters kind of to what he called Main Street, but really the early majority and the late majority. Late majority are people who are risk averse and they're going to join in later. But the early majority are people, you know, that are willing to work with a new product, but their needs are different than the early adopters, who are a lot more tolerant of, you know, beta software and everything else as you're just developing things and easier to sell to, and they're pioneers and they're willing to take a chance. But how do you get from there, which many companies get stuck from and never cross that chasm, how do you get to the early majority, kind of the mainstream customers? And, you know, I could tell you the secret in 2 seconds, and then you won't have to buy the book. But, you know, the concept I remember from there, and I think he labeled it later, I don't know if it had a name in this first book, there's been other books since. And the concept was the bowling alley concept. So you don't just look at it as one big market. You identify each of the pins you have to knock off. You know, whether you're identifying customers by their particular needs, their industry, their size, their geography, what do I need to do with my products, you know, software or service or whatever it may be, or a physical product, what do I need to do to address that market segment and then have all the supporting materials? Do I need to add features to the product? Do I need different packaging, pricing? How do I target each of those pins and knock them off? And that works very well, and that's what we do. And it surprised me that for many years, you know, software companies have been reluctant to verticalize it all, which is one of the ways to do that. But they're just reluctant to do that because they don't want to lose the appeal of cross-industry, anyone could buy me. I think they're figuring that out now. There's a way to balance that. But also depends what stage in life you are. But to get from that early adopter to the next stage, you have to offer something that targets each of those individual markets, because they are separate markets, and then you do them one by one and you knock them off, and then you're successful in reaching that early majority.
Such a good book. You're reminding me, I think it's time to go back and reread that one. So thank you for that. Craig, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I've learned so much from you and really appreciate you taking the time.
And thanks for having me. I enjoy these conversations, as you can see.
Really appreciate this opportunity to learn from somebody who has actually helped to shape and define the field. If you'd like to learn more about today's topic, please visit the links in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcasts. You don't want to miss an episode. We would love to hear from you, our audience. Tell us what you like and what you'd like to hear more of. And please leave us a review on any of the streaming platforms. For the CFO Show, I'm your host, Melissa Howitson. Until next time.